save the date. October 15th, Farmers Bank and Trust presents Oktoberfest on the line. You won't want to miss it. Exclusive beer garden with premium tasting flights, gourmet hot dogs, sauerkrauts, and mustards, kindergarten with a bounty house and face painting and other kids' activities. There will also be local vendors, a German car show, and more. Live entertainment with local performers, including the Texarkana Regional Chorale and Grammy Award-winning polka band Brave Combo. Kids 12 and under are free. Saturday, October 15th is Oktoberfest on the line.
Tune in Texarkana. So, Carl, I had a really good time talking to Seth. He was a really laid-back guy. Your epitome of homegrown country artist definitely had this retro feel on country legends.
Yeah, he's the real deal. Yeah. I mean, he's really well-grounded in the history of the music, and there's nothing phony about him at all.
Yeah, I feel like he's got this real authentic Southern American kind of experience that he draws off of, you know, from his real home life. Like he said, he had 30 people in his class in Oklahoma. I mean, that's just as a real Southern authentic rural life experience as you get. And it's really cool to see how that has impacted his music.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So let's give it a listen.
Absolutely. Welcome to Tune In Texarkana. I'm your host, Aaron DeBlanc, and we have Carl Richter producing.
Hi there.
And then today we have a special guest, Seth Reed.
Hey, how's it going?
And so you traveled from Oklahoma, right? Or you're going to Oklahoma after you leave here?
Yeah, I was actually working up in Oklahoma. I live in New Boston, you know, not too far from here.
Just a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yeah, yeah. You know, whenever you live out in the middle of nowhere, 20 minutes ain't nothing.
Yeah, that's a quick trip.
Yeah, you drive that on the main street looking at Sonics, not going into them because you ain't got no money in your pockets. But.
So did you grow up in New Boston?
I did not. I grew up in Hayworth, Oklahoma.
Okay.
It's southeast of Idabel, about 13, 14 miles. It's population of under 300.
Really?
Yeah, but we got a post office. So,
did you have a school there?
We did. We did. We.
What was your class size?
I think it was like 32, 33. Wow. We weren't the smallest by any means. It's actually the same school my mom went to whenever I was young. Same building and everything.
Really? Like we're not even doing renovations. Like,
whenever I left, they finally they did renovations on it. But, you know,
that is wild. 300 in your class or, yeah.
30-something in my class.
30-something in your class, 300 together. I think my class alone was around 1,500.
Ooh. Yeah. I couldn't have sat through that
drastically. Oh, it was horrendous. It was horrendous. But you are born and raised Texas, right? No, Oklahoma.
Yeah, Oklahoma. I was born in McAllister, Oklahoma. Those of you that don't know where Idabel and Hayworth is, Hayworth's only about 4 miles from the Texas state line, about, once again, 4 miles from the Arkansas state line. Where I grew up was just actually on the line about a mile. The community's called America.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm pretty dang American. And the road I grew up on was called America Road.
Well, yee-haw, yee-yee.
You know, I guess three times over. But, yeah, so
it was. What was that like, though? Like, was it hard to find friends or, like, find people? Like, you're a musician, and I remember you telling me, like, in your teens is when you got into it. So, like, were you still in Oklahoma and BFE at the time?
Yeah, just out in the middle
How
of nowhere.
How hard was it to find other musicians?
If it wasn't for school, I'd have never met anybody, I don't think, to be honest with you. I had cousins as best friends growing up till I started school.
So you lived in a place where, like, you couldn't see your neighbor if you looked out?
No, unless someone had a trailer in their yard or something, which was normally us. Right. In my grandparents' yard, so we could see them. But eventually,
you got to have the whole family on the lot.
Yeah,
I totally feel that. I've been there.
So, pretty much no one except for cousins. until I entered school. And, you know, my preschool all the way through my high school was only about half mile from each other. I mean, it was all just right there. So the people I went to school with, typically, I was with them the whole time.
Yeah, all through childhood. And did you like that?
I mean, I didn't know any different. Right now, right. I think I really appreciate it because, you know, you don't know a lot of people, but the friendships you bond real close. The guy that showed me guitar, like I said, we actually started playing on the bus, the school bus.
Okay.
And my dad had just bought me an Esteban guitar off QVC, the home shopping
no
network.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
And
on QVC.
Even though I'm only 30 years old, I grew up with no internet until I pretty much joined the Navy. Like, what? It wasn't a thing. Yeah, until I was 21. I was born in 91, but we were just in an area that didn't
you couldn't
have,
get it.
No, it wasn't yeah. an option. And you were normally too busy either working or avoiding work to actually do
something.
Blue-collar
life is really hard.
Yeah,
it was you know, it's all-encompassing. You don't have time to have fun a lot of it. You're working too much.
Yeah, that was kind of it. And, you know, my grandpa had a farm.
Really?
Had a probably, I guess, 40, 50 head of cattle. And he got into horses later on whenever I was in middle school. So, pretty much got a big taste of that.
Good country boy.
Yeah, I didn't know any better. And
too bad you weren't born in Texas, though.
I know. I get that held against me quite a bit. But then I got to remind them Chuck Norris was born in Oklahoma.
Oh, man. Yeah, he redeems you guys.
Yeah, that's what we got going for us. But
I remember being on the school bus talking, like, in fifth grade to my, like, classmates about Chuck Norris and how awesome he was. And I'm like, that's so funny.
We were, obviously, my grandpa watched Walker, Texas Ranger and Bonanza like it was the news or something.
Do you think all of that impacted why you chose classic outlaw country?
Undoubtedly. You know, just growing up, to be honest, kind of secluded. And I grew up listening to my grandpa's music, my dad's music.
So what artists were those?
A lot of Waylon Jennings. I mean, Waylon Jennings kind of set the tone for everything. My grandpa liked Hank Sr. a whole bunch.
I like Hank Williams Jr.
Yeah,
a lot, too.
That's Hank Williams Jr. is my bread and butter at gigs. Yep. But, he listened to some of him.
Wait, did you say bread, butter, and eggs?
No, just bread and butter, no eggs.
Eggs should be thrown in there next time. It just fills it all in.
It really should be.
No, that's great, though. And we talked earlier about, like, modern Texas country that still has that old school feel. And I deeply see that in what you do.
It's very, you know, I don't think you can ever get away from your roots entirely.
No. They're always going to be a part of you.
That's what I grew up listening to is a sound that I knew the men that I respected. And so that's a sound that I wanted to emulate. And a lot of it was like showing my dad. I remember playing Amanda by Don Williams and Waylon Jennings whenever I was a kid and sending it to my dad. Because I remember whenever he was teaching me to drive, he would listen to this song. And he's like, Waylon Jennings never had to try hard.
No, he didn't.
To get the sound he got. And it was effortless. Mm-hmm. And my dad doesn't, like, speak highly of a lot of musicians, especially. Right. He wasn't – no one in my family was really music-based.
Oh, so you're the black sheep?
I am. My mom took piano lessons, but never really came from it. She sang a lot to us, but I think a lot of that was – I was raised Church of Christ. Uh-huh. That's no instrumentals in church.
Oh, wow. Know?
Yeah, there's none of that. It's all
– Me too.
Yeah.
Really? So that's so wild, because I grew up Southern Baptist, where people are speaking in tongues, and you've got praise and worship, and that was just, you couldn't not have praise and worship. That would just be weird.
Yeah, I mean, it was just...
People getting into it, so, like, that's I didn't know that was a thing.
And I can't say it, it put me at a fault. Waylon Jennings was raised Church of Christ as well, so I took that connection, and I kind of ran with it. And a lot of people say that's how you can... A lot of people raised in that a cappella style can find a key a whole lot easier. You have nothing to hide behind.
Mm-hmm. That's wild, though, because, like, I know a lot of people have gained or grown their skill set through choir.
Oh, I mean,
or whatever.
Ray Charles. I mean, that amazing. Dude pretty much just put blues lyrics over gospel songs. I say pretty much like I could do it.
So simple.
Yeah, he made it seem easy.
He did. He was very fluid.
But as far as music goes, you know, I had that, and my dad and mom. My mom didn't like country music growing up.
Oh, really? What did she listen
Not
to?
Not at all. She was hair metal 120%.
I can resonate with that. Like, I vibe with that.
Aerosmith was what we listened to Metallica. When we got in the car. Yes. And that, you know, it's my dad was a big Boston fan. And that's just kind of what I grew up with. And
so you had family who were Yankees living down in the South, raising you the Southern way. That's really interesting.
I wouldn't call it. My old man was, he's from Oklahoma City.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yeah.
But so, your mama was a Yankee.
My mom's actually was born, I think, in Arkansas.
Really?
But she was raised in that area. But it was just, you know, the way we view cities down there. Because if we don't know you, we don't know you.
Exactly.
And my dad comes from Oklahoma City. And they saw him as a city boy, but he's
no city in Oklahoma is a real, like, no. City. You but know?
The man can rebuild a small block any quicker than anyone I've ever seen.
That has... that ability has really diminished with time.
You know,
there's not a lot of people who can just do physical labor and create things out of nothing.
The dude was in just out of this world with not only his ability to work, his technical knowledge, but also his work ethic was a big thing to me. And I think that's also what drew me to that older sound. Because when I was in high school, that's whenever the start of the tailgates, the red solo cups, the dirt road. Yeah. Mentality came back in style, and it didn't really speak of the lifestyle we grew up in. We worked.
Yes, blue-collar lifestyle.
I didn't go to my senior skip day because I mowed lawns trying to make money to goof off. We made money, we spent it.
Yeah.
But it was...
But you were making money, and a lot of kids can't say that. I did the same thing. I worked with my dad. He was a carpenter since 13, all the way up. I've had jobs, multiple jobs, and there's not a lot of people this day that can say... They know what hard work is.
Yeah.
If you've not worked labor out in this heat, you probably don't know what hard work is. And I think that's what today's country has been lacking.
Yeah, it's all focused around the pleasures of country life, which is really a rare item. You may get it once a week if you're lucky, or you're going to be working because that's lots of work, multiple jobs. I think. That's kind of what drew me to where I was going, is I respected those men that would work all day, come home, and still have time to be good parents, grandparents to
family.
Me. My grandpa and my dad are my world.
Oh, I love that.
You know, I respect the world out of them, and that's why I kind of leaned into their music. My dad didn't like country music that much. He listened to it some.
What do you listen to?
Boston and Van Halen.
I can get down with Van Halen now. That's pretty cool.
But that was his stuff.
So you came from two metalheads, basically.
Pretty much.
80s metalheads.
And the bridge that I found was Waylon Jennings into my grandpa's music.
Grandparents are saving us here, because I was the same way. He was a Merle Haggard guy.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Merle.
He even dressed up as Merle Haggard for Halloween at the church one day, and I was just like, you do you. It's great. I love this.
I'm happy I get to
be exposed to this. Like, so many people don't know country legends or outlaw country.
Yeah.
And then here you are, 30, young, but you have that imprint on you. Now you're bringing it back. Like, the way you speak versus the way you sing, there's a difference. You know what I mean? You're into a character, and it's awesome.
It's and I think you kind of hit it on the head, because I grew up singing these albums whenever I was started out on, even before the guitar, you know, you sing what you hear. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was hearing, was a lot of those older country albums and
from
such.
From your grandfather?
Or? From both. My dad loved Waylon Jennings.
Really?
He was really into Waylon.
And you know, do you listen to his son, Mason Jennings?
I've listened to Struggle, his grandson, and Shooter Jennings, his youngest son. I listen to a lot of Shooters
too. Like, I love that there just is something that they can pass down.
I mean, even his wife, Shooter's mother, Jessie Coulter, was a fantastic artist in her own right. And
we talked about Billy Joe Schaefer and all these other people.
Billy Joe Schaefer. You know, I can't be like, I grew up on Billy Joe Schaefer. I didn't know about a lot of music. I didn't grow up with the internet.
It was exposed to you eventually.
And then Waylon Jennings was a direct correlation to Billy Joe Schaefer. You know, Billy Joe Schaefer wrote a lot of the Honky Tonk
Heroes
album.
All of their stuff, man. He was the ghostwriter for so many artists.
Fantastic guy.
For even Willie. Like, I mean, this guy was the youngest of the crowd of all of the outlaw country artists. But he was writing all of their stuff. And he didn't perform as much as them, but very talented. Very, very talented. And so that's really cool to see, like, I don't know. Like, I just love it. There's so much great stuff about outlaw country. And, like, a lot of people don't know the history of it or, like, the significance of it. It's kind of transformed into Texas dirt country.
Yeah, yeah, it gets hidden in that genre for sure.
Are you a Sturgill Simpson guy?
I am. So,
we were talking about that earlier.
Actually, progressing with that story that I was telling you about where I'm from, you know, I grew up, I played basketball, all that fun stuff.
You're tall enough.
I am. I'm all a 6'7".
Guys, he's 6'7". He is tall as heck.
And, you know, that's, I think I was only 6'6" in high school. I grew
only.
Yeah, I was a small, shrimp.
I was joking earlier. I'm like, can you imagine, because we went to Hopkins before here, and I was like, can you imagine what people think, like us standing next to each other? I'm 5'2". He's 6'7". He's over a foot taller than me. I'm like, I must like look so miniature next to you.
I'm big for my age.
Only 30.
But, you know, I grew up with that Waylon sound, and I'm going to digress here into kind of off topic, because that outlaw sound
was, take any tangent you want.
It was his sound, and that's I think that's what kept me so impressed with Waylon when I moved on in life, was it wasn't his actions outside of music that made him an outlaw. It was his pursuit of his own sound that made him an outlaw. Everyone focuses on the, you know, the drug addiction, all that stuff, but it wasn't that made him, I don't want to say blackballed in Nashville, but kind of the black sheep.
Was but his all pursuit of them were doing that, music. Right? You had Willie Nelson was doing that, Billy Joe Schaefer.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them were doing that, Merle Haggard.
It was very, you know, and that was a different time whenever, you know, because you're talking early 60s, mm-hmm. whenever country music was smoothing out, trying to be more appealing. But kind of jumping back into where I was, I grew up listening to that. Relatively sheltered, you know, it's because I listened to what my parents listened to and what was on the radio and what CDs I found in the $5 bin.
Wait, you were allowed to listen to the radio? Because I wasn't. So that's a significant benefit there. We weren't allowed to listen to anything other than Christian music growing up. So it was like,
That's something else.
Right? So my introduction to music was purely off of my own interests. Whereas you were allowed. That's awesome. Being from, like you said, the Church of Christ, right?
Yeah.
So explain to me, what is the Church of Christ? I'm sorry if that sounds ignorant.
No, you're fine.
Are you like on the Pentecostal level? Or are you?
No,
like
no. So if you think of Church of Christ is very conservative. Like, there's no instruments in that. And
that's right. You were saying no, like, music at all.
Yeah, it was all because it's, as far as I'm familiar with, you know, I grew up with it, but the way you understand it can always be up to interpretation. Mm-hmm. But the way I seen it is we didn't do music and dancing and stuff because it wasn't stated in the Bible.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some verse that says something about sing and make music in your heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they latched on to that and said no instruments, not even a piano or anything. Mm-hmm.
But I went to an Episcopal church for a few years here in Texarkana. My daughter was very interested in religion, and I was like, yes, I'm going to let you make your own decision, figure out what's right for you. But I wanted her to go to a different church. And I grew up Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the potlucks, and we had people singing all the time. And then we went to an Episcopal church, and that was drastically different than what my childhood exposed to me. And I was like, where's all the music? Where's praise and worship? Like, where is this? What is this?
And I was lucky, even though growing in a small town, I went to church in Idabel. And pretty much the entire choir team, Idabel's not big.
Yeah, you know, at all.
It's probably a quarter size of Texas, kind of if that. We got a super Walmart, but that's about it.
Did you know?
Yeah, that came about, I think, my high school tenure. But
look at y'all.
We had the entire choir team that went to church there. So it's not like I was deprived of music. They were phenomenal singers.
Do you think that?
I really think so, and that's why I think I leaned into the more baritone style, because I heard my dad singing and everyone else singing.
It's a masculine thing. I can see that, because, from when you talk to when you go into the deep thing, I'm like, he's not going to pull out a falsetto anytime soon. Yeah,
but what's funny is I do.
You do? I do. Because are we going to see some of that today?
Not on any of my originals, that's for sure. I pull it out every now and again. I got to where I started mimicking people at church, the females, the males, the baritone tenors, altos, and never could make it to soprano.
You're very observant.
Yeah, I guess so. I just got, I hate to say it, bored. Mm-hmm. And you mimic things.
I mean, we all kind of did that in church. Yeah. You're like young and you're like, I'm ready for more sleep. And your mom's over there nudging you like, wake up.
Yeah.
Like, I swear I'm trying.
There's just a dude talking. But the worship part was, and that's, it's whenever I say Church of Christ, it's not like we all abide by the same rules. It's not governed by an entity as like an archbishop or anything like that. Okay. So it's almost open to interpretation. But as far as I know, the Church of Christ stemmed from almost a non-denominational standpoint to where they're like, if it doesn't say we should do it, we're not going to do it.
So I grew up non-denominational and Southern Baptist. It was very open-minded compared to a lot of other things that had been going, like all the other religions I had gone through. Like, I consider non-denominational very open-minded and forgiving.
That was a lot of things. I kind of came in at a changing point in the church's views of stuff. My dad was raised very conservative. That's actually where my dad and mom met, was a Church of Christ school up in, I think it was Edmond, Oklahoma Christian. And they started, I don't want to say relaxing, but trying being more understanding, because the old church's point of view was, if you're not Church of Christ, you're
going to hell.
Yeah, and that was
very Old Testament.
But it stemmed from, once again, this is my understanding, a non-denominational type perspective to where if we're not supposed to do it, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And to, if you don't do these things that are said and you do the things that are not said, it was a very strict contrast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where my parents, grandparents' generation comes from. It was started becoming more open-minded when I was younger.
Very cool.
But that, I say all that to get to, that's where I think I learned my ear.
Okay.
Was singing that a cappella and mimicking the singing styles of my dad, which was a bass. And my mom used to sing a lot when I was real younger.
I'm sure it was hearing that all a cappella. Like, you really get to focus on the sound of what people are projecting. And
there's no room to hide behind any instrument or anything. It's you and accompanied by other folks. But grew up in that more conservative lifestyle.
Wait, so when did you start? You said you were 14, right, when you started playing music?
Right around 14, my dad got me a guitar from QVC, the Home Shopping Network.
I thought it was all jewelry on QVC. Yeah. I'm like, I can't imagine seeing a guitar pop up. What kind of guitar was it?
It was an Esteban guitar. It was a dreadnought. Esteban was a Spanish finger picker.
Yep. Do you do finger picking?
I do.
I can't stand finger picking. It's so hard to do.
It's
so difficult.
It's definitely,
I'm not coordinated enough to do that.
It takes a different mentality, but
I feel like you got to really let loose and just let it play itself.
I can't think about it when I do it.
Yeah, but, otherwise you're going to mess it up.
That's kind of where that styling came from. Is it came with a VHS. Once again, didn't have internet. I had that VHS tape, and it showed him playing, but whenever it got into the instruction part, I got bored, so I only watched him playing.
You didn't have YouTube back then.
And so I got into that Spanish finger picking style.
It's beautiful.
It's
very beautiful.
And then grew up in country music, eventually learned strumming and stuff.
Is there a lot of difference in between the Spanish finger picking style and country finger picking? I feel like country would be a lot less rapid.
It just depends. You can get those people that play banjo and such.
Yeah, that's great.
And they'll,
that goes fast paced.
We talked about Billy Strings at Hopkins.
Love,
you know,
Billy Strings.
Country is such a broad topic. It encompasses people's general knowledge of bluegrass.
Subgenres of it.
So It really just depends. And so I was really into finger picking and stuff. Then I heard a band right after I graduated called Turnpike Troubadours.
Oh, amazing band.
Fantastic.
Absolutely amazing.
And the lead singer was from Wright City, which if you don't know McCurtain County geography, which it took me until I was 21 to figure it out.
So it is in McCurtain County, okay.
Wright City is in McCurtain County, and that's where he went to school for a while. And we heard this, and you know, McCurtain County is known for everything illegal, pretty much.
That's great.
Yeah, so I heard that, and he was also a finger picker, and it kind of led me into the style and the way I went about things.
Are we going to see new finger picking today?
I can do a little finger picking songs and such. I got a song out called Red River Flows.
What songs are you going to be performing in general for us today?
I'll perform the song Better Man, which made it up to 87 in the Texas Independent Country Charts. Just really? Independent meaning that I think it includes online charts.
For a second, because I read about how many streams you've had on Spotify and stuff, and it seems like you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm not good at bragging at myself, but I'm proud of it. The first song I put out is actually my biggest song. It's called Too Far Gone. And it's sitting around 5,000 or something, you know, which means I made about $15 off of it.
Exactly. A lot of money.
But that's the first song I put out, and it seems to be doing pretty well. I'm pretty proud of it. I recorded it all by myself. I do all the mixing and mastering of my songs.
Really? What do you use?
It just depends. I've kind of evolved. I started out that song and the song Northeast Texas Blues is recorded on a $100 SE microphone, a condenser.
No, but I bet it has this authentic crackly sound to it.
Yeah, that's, you know, the way stuff's going nowadays, it's fantastic. The amount of quality
sounding.
You can get for that. Yeah. And that's, I would say it's raw because I purposely make it raw. It's raw because I don't know any better.
At least you're honest.
Well, let's hear something.
Where are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play Where the Red River Flows, a little finger picking ditty.
Yes. And that's a beautiful guitar. Tell us about why you have that embellishment on there.
This is a Gibson Hummingbird. It was Gibson's first foray into the square shoulders, which is more squared here, like a J45. It's more sloped off. But, I bought this back before I even started playing music full-time.
Really?
Sorry, I'm getting a little cotton mouth on y'all.
It's quite an investment for,
it was definitely something.
My first guitar was passed on to me from my grandfather. It was a POS.
I had that Esteban growing up.
That's not even bad, though. Like, that's great.
But this one I bought back in, I guess it's been 2018, whenever I was going to school for a while, and I didn't have as many responsibilities, so I bought me a guitar like an immature person does.
But at least it was a good investment.
It was, and it's something that I'm really glad I made. But, it's a Gibson Hummingbird 2017. Its name's Rose. I named it after my grandfather's horse he had the whole time I was growing up. But I wrote this song a while back. It's called Where the Red River Flows. Crossing that old bridge, 259. Open that old bridge, stop it straight line. And tell me, little darling, what are you here for? You can't spend your life picking yourself off the floor. Lance and I, we're gonna drown down our pain. Just a couple of lost souls where the Red River flows. I foot down on the throttle, giving it some gas. You can spend your life, yourself from the past. Light in the rear view is my hometown. I never thought I'd leave this place and not make a sound. And tonight we're going to drown down all pain. Just a couple of lost souls where the Red River flows.
I just love the way your whole essence changes when you start performing. And, like, the voice goes deeper. You're so focused on what you're doing. I'm seeing you finger picking, and I'm like, my goodness, they're moving pretty fast.
Yeah, I'm pretty slow till you get that guitar in my hands.
I love the lyrics, too. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about how you come up with your lyrics?
Yeah, I, you know, this is, went to high school. I joined the Navy right around the age of 20, 21.
How long did you say you were in there for? Four years?
Yeah, right in between 3 and 4.
Okay.
And I came back, and that song was kind of a reflection on leaving your hometown, and you're expecting something. Like, you want some sort of grandeur. Anything, or something, yeah. But you don't. Instead, you're on a plane going up to Chicago to go to boot camp to get yelled at.
Yeah.
And it's just I don't want to say a feeling of emptiness, but it's just a lack of expectations met because you expect
things to be better than they are.
Especially coming from a small town, you know, it's, you go from being known everywhere to
nobody knows you. Yeah. Nobody cares.
And so that song is just kind of a realization. And, you know, growing up where I grew up, 259, that's a main highway.
Yep.
And, that song just kind of came about itself. And that song's unique from what other songs I have out, where all the other ones are normally fast-paced. I don't want to say fast-paced, but they're strumming songs, a little more driven.
Subscribe today to the Texarkana Gazette, and you'll get an Apple iPad to use at no charge, plus a Sunday paper delivered to your home. Every day, you'll get an electronic version of the Gazette downloaded directly to your iPad. It's the ultimate home delivery. No more waiting, wet papers, or going out into the cold. And everything you want, the latest news, puzzles, and coupons, is right there. You can zoom in to make articles easier to read, or have the iPad read them to you aloud. Enjoy full-color photo galleries and embedded video content, and access the Gazette's archives back to 2002. For only $29.99 a month, it's a great deal. Call 870-648-1209. That's 870-648-1209 to subscribe to the Texarkana Gazette today.
What is, like, some of your main inspiration for these songs? Like, where do you go to inside of yourself to come up with this stuff?
You know, I would like to give you some crazy spiritual answer, but it's
I want the honest answer. Yeah,
it's almost a feeling of emptiness I have to find before the words just kind of pull themselves out. Because I believe words find a melody instead of putting the words to a melody.
So you make the instrumentals before you make the lyrics?
I just kind of let them come out at the same time.
Really?
I normally have a line in my head or something that starts it, and then it builds off that. I guess I don't chase inspiration. You let
it find you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it is so to not people, making it feel forced.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. So many people try to force stuff because they're so excited that they want it. They're not willing to let it just naturally develop.
And I think that's kind of what, you know, I write all my own songs that are out. I may co-write them some with my guitarist and such.
Well, at least I don't have a ghostwriter.
Yeah, I ain't got a ghostwriter.
I mean, you can tell that by, like, you know, you talking about 259.
Yeah, I.
You wouldn't know that unless you lived here.
It's a very, you know, that's the highway that runs through my all the places in McCurtain County.
Where that runs north and south, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, it goes pretty far south. Whenever I play in Nacogdoches, I go all the way down there.
I love Nacogdoches.
Pretty place. Real pretty place.
Yeah, so much history. First city on Trinity, right?
I'm not smart enough to jump in on that one.
I believe it was the first city on the Trinity. But Nacogdoches has a lot of history with country artists as well.
I could definitely see that. And so I guess just kind of jumping back in, I grew up with these influences, joined the Navy, and you get your eyes open. I've never been on an airplane.
Really? But then you talked about you worked on them or something, right?
Yeah, I was I worked on P-3s and EA-6Bs. I was a UHF
technician. AKA he's smart.
So it was all electronics based and stuff, but I enjoyed it. I met some of the best friends I have in the world through the Navy.
And that's amazing. Thank you for your service.
I appreciate that.
What did you gain from that helped you with your music?
I think it was more just I become a lot more open-minded when you grow up in a small community, growing up around a select amount of people.
So you went to the Navy and became more open-minded?
I did, because I met a lot of different walks of life that I'd never witnessed before.
Well, a lot of people in Texarkana area haven't left this area, so if they join the military or they go overseas or out of state, it's a huge shift.
Yeah, it's eye-opening for sure, and a lot of the best friends I made weren't the same religion I was, weren't the same nationality. So it was very eye-opening. So I come back here, and I was raised kind of in the mentality of seen, not heard.
Yes.
And so whenever I found music could be an opening for me to say what I wanted to say.
All this stuff you've repressed.
And it was just, it was almost therapeutic. And I started with that. And me and my buddy that I went to high school with that I mentioned earlier, he went to college, I went to the military, came back, kind of got back together, and it just kind of turned into this. I started playing solo shows, and to be honest with you, there's nothing like playing live.
Tell me again about the solo show that you first had to do that your band wasn't able to make and you had to do by yourself.
Yeah, so the band couldn't make it to the first show. I believe it was at Jake's Grill House in Idabel. And so I had to perform by myself, which I'd been singing for a little while, but I always had someone up with me. So I had to perform 3 hours by myself, and it kind of turned into where it was addicting in a sense.
Were you prepared for that? Was there a
struggle?
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I don't think I was prepared till I'd been 50 gigs in.
Oh, really? And how many gigs do you think you've done so far? Because you've been putting out a lot. And that's how I found you, because I just saw this stuff constantly popping on my Facebook. Like, I don't know him, but he's got to be obviously talented. He's got a manager, and he's everywhere, everywhere.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, I'd say, oh, man, that's hard to think about. At least two a week. Past year, and then
52 weeks, so,
and that's on the slow side of it. I mean,
so let's say 3 times 52, 6 times 3 times 5.
Yeah, looking 50, in between 150 15. 250.
You're looking at 156 at least.
And it just kind of turned into I posted videos. I played at the New Boston VFW, and they booked me for their Linden location, and I posted a video of me playing David Allen Coe's "The Ride."
Ah, awesome! Very cool.
Jeff Duda, who is now my manager, saw that.
Okay.
And that's how he contacted me, and I sent him some other recordings and stuff. And he's kind of helped me tune. I don't want to say tune. He's helped the management side of it, because I'm awful at booking. I'm a gomer.
Really?
I'm like, oh, whatever you say.
Well, it's a lot of research.
It is, looking up places and all this, and he does all that.
Contacting him and all that, yeah.
And since I've been with him, you know, I've been from Austin, Texas, playing regularly this past year. I've played there quite often. And Austin, including the surrounding area.
And we talked about you possibly going into Luckenbach and all these other old school Texas hill country kind of venues where I think you could do exponentially well.
Yeah, you know, that Texas country scene that still adheres to the more classic traditions of things. You got the Broken Spoke in Austin, Green Hall.
Yes, New Braunfels. Whitewater and Canyon Lake, yeah, all of that connected together.
All that. Just so much history, Luckenbach, Billy Bob's, all that stuff that still adheres to the more classic way of things.
And I love that Texas has that little pocket where in the hill country that exists.
Yeah,
it's definitely. It may not be easy to access. It's a long drive. It's a long haul,
and that's something that I made several times, you know, driving 8 to 10 hours.
At least.
The play a few shows a weekend, come back, do what I needed to do back home, going back that next weekend.
Is it draining?
I actually love road time. That's whenever it's almost like mowing to me. If someone likes to mow their lawn and stuff.
I get that. It's cathartic.
I'm eating up miles. That's when my mind is focusing on a minor task and I'm able to.
Right. Just kind of escape everything else. Just focus on what you're doing.
Yeah, and which has come in handy because I played in Austin. I've gone up to around Philadelphia, right outside Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about earlier. I am so surprised that you did a northeastern kind of thing because, like, I would never expect people in Philadelphia and New York and in Boston to be like, bring Texas country up here.
Yeah.
What was that reception like?
I don't think it was an intentional thing on their end.
it was a mistake on their end.
They just happened to be there when I was playing, and I'm not the normal person that's up there. I talk like I got cornbread in my mouth all the time.
Cornbread and milk?
Yeah, and I'm a big old boy, and I'm relatively easy to come up to and talk to. And
really? Because I feel like you might get off this intimidating thing, because you are a
I'm very big
built dude at 6'7", and it's just like, holy smokes, I better not even like look at him the wrong way.
Yeah,
but then you're like this teddy bear.
I am. I'm undoubtedly a teddy bear, and that means and it was just something that's different in my personality. I'm not a type A by any means.
But you're doing really well for not being a type A. You're still going after everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's considering to where I started, you know, playing La Fagadas when I was just now starting out and up there in Hoxhaton and such. Mm-hmm. The mentality's changed just from, I think, playing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so much hiding behind my guitar, it's talking to the crowd, getting into it and such.
Yeah, I've noticed on your Facebook you do take a lot of pictures with the audience and stuff like that. I love that. I love that. You're very personable, you're very intimate with people. There's so many times I've gone to shows, and I won't name them, but it's like, man, I'm just looking to get, like, a handshake or something, anything to let me know that, like, I'm here. So it's really cool that you take the time to sit there and meet your audience and understand how significant that is.
Yeah, that's a big thing, you know. It's you work for them in all reality, exactly. If you want to look at it from a working point of view.
You don't have a job.
But to hear someone appreciate the sound that you have, which isn't popular nowadays. Yeah.
Out of nothing.
It's very, you're grateful. And that's, absolutely. You appreciate them people to a tremendous amount.
Is there a level of vulnerability?
Oh, undoubtedly.
That? Yeah.
It's especially with the originals, all right. The song I was talking about earlier, Better Man, made it to, you know, low on that chart, 87.
Hey, you were on the chart. That's all that matters.
It was actually a song about I went through a divorce. It was a vulnerable time, and I was getting messages about how people were talking about how they'd went through something similar. And just knowing that you were heard and reached to that.
Right. That level. Means a lot. That means a lot. So has that transformed into any of your songs?
You know, I can't say I write songs to reach people. I write songs to feel heard. And I think that allows other people to be heard. I don't write sad songs or listen to sad songs to be sad. I do it to feel understood and to know that you're not alone. Someone else has felt a similar way.
Do you feel like that's a form of processing?
I really think so. And it's everybody's different, I know. But I like to feel like.
This is a healthy way to process stuff. Like, definitely. This is great. You're doing it creatively. So what are you going to play for us next?
How about Better Man?
Yeah, 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 we can do better, man. This song, once again, this one's out on all streaming services and such. By plane, truck, or train, and it gets mighty lonesome when I hear you say my name. I know why he did it, honey, I know why he left. Your mother couldn't stand not to have you to herself, and I'm tired of being. Yes, I'm better man, better man. Oh, 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 oh. There's a homeless man, DK. Godless and loveless, as I pass by, to that damn truck around in North on 259, walking up to that river, as traffic flies by, ring off my finger, sit for a while, walking up to that river, as traffic flies by. Big flies by, and I'm tired of being. Yes, I'm tired of being better man. Appreciate that.
Round of applause.
Yeah, that's once again, local references all through that song.
I love that part about it. And there's so many Texas country artists that do that. And I love it. Because I'm like, who is it? Tyler Childers that has a song about like a strip club.
Tyler. Whiskey Myers.
Oh, it's Whiskey Myers.
Working at the.
I love Whiskey Myers.
Oh, shoot. I can't remember the lyrics.
But it's talking about a strip club in Tyler, of all places. And I'm like, I love that. I love that they're picking on these little spots that nobody really knows about unless you know about it, unless you're into that scene.
Yeah. And I think that's appealing to some folks. That, it is. I mean, even if you don't know where it is.
You've heard of it.
Yeah. And it's to hear someone singing from a small town that sings about these local things. And it's you don't have to seek some sort of grandeur to have something worth saying. Just because you're from Hayworth, Oklahoma, Texarkana, New Boston, Hooks.
I think that makes it so much more relatable, though.
Yeah. Everyone has a story. I think
people have finally started shifting from, like, this mass-produced kind of corporate sound to, like, oh, that's obviously not working because it's not relating to anything. Yeah. But it sounds great because it was mastered perfectly. But then, you know, I think we're kind of finally shifting back to like trying to like connect with our audience and understanding and appreciating that.
It's definitely, I think, you know, a lot of musicians hate streaming and I hate how they don't tape people much, but
they don't.
Streaming has opened up more music to more people.
It gets you a lot of exposure, but exposure doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah. That's 100% right. But
so unless you're getting the exposure and then later down the line, that's going to connect to something tangible with some dollar bills in your hands.
It's definitely, it takes a hit.
Do you think it's worked for you in your favor?
You know, I don't know. I do, to be honest with you.
Exposure is important.
It definitely is. And it's not just to be able to go on your phone and look up a song or have a song
at the
sent
touch
to you
of your finger
that you never would have heard before.
Right.
Opens your point of view, your perspective.
Absolutely.
An insane amount. And I think that's a positive side of that type of a
platform.
Yeah, situation that's going on with musicians is you're going to get heard more. It just depends. Yeah, you would have made more money in the 80s and 90s. But
absolutely. I have a friend, our first artist who was on here, he had a million plus streams, and he's like, I made $1,000 off of a million streams. Yeah. Like, do you know how depressing that is? All that work. It cost me $1,200 to produce this song, but I only made $1,000. I didn't even come in even.
Yeah.
That's a little depressing, but also, like, it's cool the idea of, like, so many people hearing your art.
It definitely is, and that's something that, you know, that's... I produce all my own stuff, which is why it sounds raw. It's because it is raw. Cool, I'm not smart enough to know how to make it sound.
It works in your favor.
I appreciate that. But it's to get messages from other people that are relating to what I'm saying is a very fulfilling thing to know that not only are you're heard to an extent that they're able to take an inspiration from it and know that
you're seen. Yeah. You're seen. You're heard and you're seen. And that's really cool because you're music has a message, it has a meaning, and people can relate to it, and I think that makes it significant. There's a lot of people who are just producing for the sake of producing, and then here you are, so far, these two songs you've played, it's like, oh, wow, like, there was a meaning behind this. You can feel it.
Yeah, it's, I'm not very good at picking up a guitar and being like, let's write a banger that everyone will listen to on the radio about tailgates and stuff. It's got to have, it's got to come from something. Once again, that's to be able to do that, but it's also come at a negative side to that perspective is no one wants to cut their teeth anymore. Everyone wants to put out an album, be big. No one wants to drive to Austin,
play
these shows.
Yeah.
No one wants to drive to Nashville,
play at these small bars.
Yeah, when I was at Nashville, I was there a week, and I played over 35 hours worth of gigs.
You did not. That's an insane amount.
It was blowing and going.
I'm sure you were just ready to crash at the end of it.
Yeah, I was happy to get home.
Let me just fall asleep with some barbecue in my mouth.
That's kind of the way it was, yeah.
But there's so much potential there for you in Nashville.
You know, Nashville, whenever you say that to a person in this side of country that I am, it's almost a bad word.
Really?
Nashville is, it represents a stonewashed version of country that we all find. No. Very, you know, that's where all the produced sound comes from, all that.
I can see that. So you got the pop country coming from that. Yeah. But you also got people like Jack White is producing a country album in Nashville, and that's really cool.
Sturgill, Jason Isbell's based in Nashville. You got all these singer-songwriters coming out of there. But it's just a typical connotation, especially in Texas and Oklahoma, with the red dirt scene, the classic country scene.
I'm a big fan of the red dirt scene. That's my favorite.
Nashville represents the big bad,
the corporate side of it. I can see that. But they got some good barbecue.
But they got some good old food.
So it's going to be enticing to go there.
And it was fun. You know, I did it. I met some fantastic fans. And I'm happy to come home. I'll be actually, start of August, I'll be going to Kansas City, Omaha, Columbus, Nebraska, doing a little mid-rest run for a week or two.
Really? Looking forward to that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. I'm sure.
That's right up my alley.
It's gorgeous up there. I have family that come and take horses down from Nebraska, and then they break them, and then they sell them down here in Houston. And it's a lucrative business.
Oh, I can definitely see that.
Nebraska's got some stuff going on. I didn't realize like they do. I didn't think about Nebraska very much.
But you know, that's once again, this is all my management's doing. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go to Nashville.
Oh, I'm sure they can look at your Spotify and be like, here's where you're getting music playing. Yeah. Like, here's where we have to go to tour. If you're going to be smart, you're going to go where they're playing your music.
That stuff. And it makes it easy in that sense, but I can tell him where I want to go. He calls, books it, tells me where I'm going to go. And because I'm not a good booker. I'm a country boy. I wasn't raised as a salesman. I definitely don't talk good about myself in terms of what I do good to make me unique compared to other people. I'm not a salesman for myself by any means.
You let people figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, you don't brag about yourself back home.
No.
That's a cardinal sin. I mean, if you brag about yourself, that 99% means it ain't true.
Exactly. People are going to think you're a liar.
And so it's nice to have someone that'll represent myself, go out and be like, yep, hey, this is what this dude sounds like. This is what he does. This is what makes him
unique.
That's
because you've done it so well. Someone's like, hey, I want to represent you and advocate for you because you're good. You know you're not full of crap like yep, a lot of those other people are. Otherwise, someone would be coming to you and want to sign you.
It's definitely was eye-opening to know that I was unique enough to be approached.
How did that happen?
It was Facebook. I posted a video playing in Linden, the ride.
Oh, really?
Jeff.
Where the Eagles
It was the VFW down there.
Oh, okay.
And it was a show where I only played two or three people. But I was like, hey, I'm going to shoot some video. I'm here. I love the people that run the establishments at the VFW in the surrounding area.
They're so grateful.
Oh, yeah. They're fantastic folks. And then me being in the Navy, I was able to kind of form that bond.
I can only imagine. Like a king walking in there.
Yeah. I don't know about all that.
Playing music and you were in the Navy? Heck yeah.
But I was able to shoot video from that. And it's, to be honest with you, looking back now, it's not a great performance. There's stuff I see, I'm like, ooh, that's flat. That's flat.
You're self-critical.
Yeah. And he approached me with it. He's like, hey, your vocal range is impressive. It impressed him in certain parts of the song. And he reached out, and I was like, hey, that's cool. Yeah, I'll do that. You know, I don't know any better. But he was able to help me get to these places I play, go to these places. I mean, all the way from Philadelphia to Austin to Omaha.
He was like a PR person for you.
Yeah, he manages all my I still do my own social media and stuff. You know, I ain't that big.
I love that, though, because it feels like you have a connection directly to somebody versus this sterile response you're going to get from, management.
It's definitely not someone that just types stuff up and sends it out there.
This mass-produced message, yeah. No, I love that about you. But what's the last song you're going to play for us?
This last song is it's actually a song I got coming out August 9th.
Really? Okay.
And
thank you for sharing.
I appreciate that. I'm happy to share it. This song,
Rose.
It's I was listening to a song called Tecumseh Valley by Towns Van Zandt, and it's about a woman that comes to a town and tries to make money, pay for her father and stuff, and ends up having to turn to walk in the streets.
Oh, wow.
To pay for it. And this, I kind of wanted to make a modern style song of that.
That's really cool.
And this is that song. It's called Gypsy Soul.
Just off the interstate, wasting all her dress, open up in the States. Minimum wage, and a baby at home. I did what she could to make ends meet. Made her turn, walking in the street. She was pretty, and she was scared. She sang here, always get worse. Just like a child on the street, dying of thirst. So baby, listen to talk, always making me cry. She'd say, baby, she just hold on. She sang here,
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I don't remember what that's from, but I know it's still like imprinted.
Dumb and Dumber, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I'll lock it a lot.
But yeah, that's coming out August 9th. That's actually going to be my first full band song. Everything else that's been put out before then has just been me with several instruments.
You've been doing it yourself up until now, right?
Yeah. But still this one, I did all the mixing and mastering and such. So really excited about that.
Is that all consuming?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, that's a lot of, like... You had to research a lot, I imagine.
Yeah, it was a lot of, YouTubing, trying to figure stuff out. It's
YouTube will teach you anything.
Oh, man, there's so much knowledge on there. It's insane.
You have no excuse, really, not know anything.
You can learn YouTube anything.
Exactly. Well, man, I've enjoyed having you here. This has been fantastic. We've already gone through an hour. It doesn't feel like
mercy.
It.
Mercy, yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm looking over, I'm like, how much time do we have? And we're like 54 minutes. I'm like, well, this went by fast.
Where can people find you? You have a Facebook page?
Yeah. Seth Reed Music on my Facebook, I believe.
R-E-I-D.
Yeah, R-E-I-D. You can just Google Seth Reed if you can't find that, and you'll see my big old teeth and face right there. I'm Googleable, all that
stuff. But you
got good
stuff. Teeth, so at least they're good teeth.
Yeah, I go to the vet for my dental care. Smile. But
no, sounds great, though. So find you on Facebook. Do you have Instagram, you said?
Yeah, Seth Reed_music.
What's your preferable way for people to contact you if they're wanting to book you?
Facebook is the easiest way of contacting me. It's, there's so many different social media outlets. There's TikTok, all that other stuff I forget to check because I'm not great on technology, to be honest with you.
That's that simple. Old soul.
Yeah. But Facebook is typically the easiest way to contact me for booking anything like that. Once again, you can just Google myself and you'll see me.
Yeah, so if you guys need to book anybody, you can go to... Seth Reed's Facebook page and hit him up there. Manager's going to hit you back up.
We'll put a link in the show description.
Right on.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming here today. I've had a great time. It was phenomenal learning who you are, what you're about. I think you've got a really great thing going.
I appreciate that a lot. And thank you all so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely.
Tune in Texarkana is a Texarkana Gazette podcast produced in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Aaron DeBlanc hosts the show, and Carl Richter produces and edits. Contact Aaron at edeblanc@texarkanagazette.com or Carl at krichter@texarkanagazette.com. If you like the show, please post a positive review wherever you get podcasts, and we'll see you next time.